Now, fitting that a man of letters should be on the panel today as we celebrate Eleanor Catton's Man Booker win, which we shall do shortly with Elizabeth Knox. Gordon McLaughlin is here. Good afternoon.
Isn't it a good afternoon? It's a wonderful day.
It's a wonderful day.
I don't care if the Wallabies beat the All Blacks now after that. This is a better win. We haven't had one of these for a long time.
And with Gordon is pilot and physicist Steve McCabe. I thought on this red letter day I should make your qualifications sound grand without sacrificing any accuracy.
Why, thank you very much.
Now, what have you both been doing, though, before we get to anything, before we start talking about John Banks and Eleanor Catton and Len Brown? What's new in your life, Steve?
Well, you mentioned the pilot bit, and I've actually been, as I mentioned last time I was here, in fact, doing an awful lot of flying recently, and it's been the most amazing experience. I showed up at Ardmore Airport about two and a half months ago, thinking, I've got a commercial pilot's license in my pocket. Even though I've not flown 8 years, I'm going to be the best pilot in the skies today. And it has been the most fantastically humbling experience. I thought, I'll have a few cobwebs on me. I've basically been completely cocooned in the damn things. It was great. I mean, it's been a wonderful learning experience. I have suddenly discovered exactly how much ongoing practice, how much currency is required for a skill like that. And I've enjoyed it enormously. I mean, you can't help but have fun when you're a mile above New Zealand and just looking out over some of the most spectacularly gorgeous scenery. I mean, you know, you fly over Auckland and you look out one window and you can see the Hauraki Gulf, you look out the other window and you can see the Tasman Sea, you can basically see the entire of New Zealand underneath you. It is spectacularly beautiful. I'm loving every second of it, but then I'm noticing that I'm sort of flying like I've never seen a plane before, and it's a little bit embarrassing.
So it's not like riding a bicycle. You're rusty up there.
Oh, heaven.
You were.
Well, I mean, I'm not so bad that I was unsafe. I mean, you know, I didn't bend any planes. You could use every single plane after the flight, I promise. But no, I mean, you know, it's commercial pilot, you're supposed to be able to hold your altitude to, you know, within 50 feet up or down, and yes. A couple of thousand I could manage, you know, that's about it, really.
That's close enough.
It was close enough. Like I say, didn't bump into a single mountain, not a one.
You've, Gordon McLaughlin, you've been seeing the country in a different way, from Steve McCabe.
I've not been a mile above it. I've been right down there amongst it. I've got a series of I live right in the city, and I've got a lot of backpacks at home. I pick one if I'm going shopping, I pick a bigger one, etc. And I've been walking around the city lately, and I've just felt how lucky we are. I mean, it's a wonderful place to be, isn't it? And at the weekend, we drove up. On the way, we went to see an old friend of mine at Okaihau, and then we went to Paihia and stayed the night and came back. I thought, what a wonderful place it is, isn't it? We're underpopulated, which, yeah. Well, we're not underpopulated. We're about right, as far as I'm concerned. I think this is a good time to be alive in Auckland, a good time to be alive in New Zealand as well. And I thought of The Lucky Country by Donald Horne. A lot of people think that he thought it was just a lucky country. The real point of that book was he said it was a lucky country because it has survived all this mismanagement. They were lucky for that reason. And I think about New Zealand like that. We've had terribly unimaginative governments for a long time now. And I think despite everything, it's a wonderful place to be. It's lovely. It doesn't get very cold, doesn't get very hot. There's plenty of light. It's just a wonderful place to be.
So the lucky country is like the phrase movers and shakers. It's been completely misinterpreted since.
Oh, yes.
And it was lucky not because of the vast resources, etc., but for the reasons you say.
Yeah. Donald Horne's point was that, you know, it's lucky to have survived all the mismanagement and all the disasters, personal behaviour and everything, and they'd survived it, and aren't they lucky? And I feel New Zealand's a bit like that as well. We do well despite everything.
I have to say, it's really refreshing to hear a Kiwi actually saying that he appreciates everything that New Zealand has. My wife flew back into New Zealand from Australia about 3 weeks ago, and as the plane was coming over the Manukau Heads approaching Auckland Airport, she was craning her neck to see out the window, going, this is just the most gorgeous sight. This is fantastic. This is beautiful.
Isn't it?
And the fella sitting next to her, he was just basically headed down in a book. And she said to him, you're a New Zealander, aren't you? He said, that's right. He says, do you not notice this? He said, nah. So I've lived here all my life. This is normal. She said, how can you not appreciate you live in the most gorgeous country in the world?
Some of us are mindful and some of us are not.
That's right.
John Banks has been committed to trial. A judge has ruled there's enough evidence to form a case accusing the ACT Party leader of fraud. Mr. Banks has been in the Auckland District Court defending himself against claims relating to his failed 2010 Auckland mayoral campaign, and the retired Wellington accountant Graham McCready believed Mr. Banks wrongly signed donations off as anonymous and brought a private prosecution. Well, it's a testament to the difference a single individual can make in society, actually, isn't it?
Someone has a go. It seems to me that John Banks is the author of his own demise, actually. It's been going on for quite a long time. There was a book written by a journalist, an old journalist many years ago, about John, how often has he changed his mind. If I was Rip Van Winkle and came back in 20 years and he was a communist, it would not surprise me. He just wants to be a politician and he wants to be famous. And I feel a bit sorry for him. He's not a bad bloke, but he's the author of his own demise. If he signed this, and there is no excuse in saying he didn't read it. Ignorance of the law is no defence. And I think it's a real shame. And I think the best thing that John could do now, frankly, is resign and go to the country and retire and be himself.
I don't think he's going to do that. He said at 4 o'clock on the news. And the Greens are saying that the PM should stand him down, at least until there's a final verdict. But I don't think there's any sign of that at the moment.
Oh, I think it's a shame. It doesn't do any politicians. All the other politicians there, I think, should be saying to themselves, this is doing us no good at all. We need to stand this man aside in the meantime and sort this all out.
But if, as you say, he is like a career politician, yeah, that's what he does, do you not think then that there's a certain degree of entitlement that creeps into his mind? And so when documents are put in front of him, why should he bother to read them? Nothing will ever come of it because, well, he's John Banks, isn't he?
Fame and prominence are a drug for some people, and I'm afraid it is with John.
Judge Phil Goodis says it's clear the electoral form that was returned was false. He says the evidence shows an apparent intention of Mr. Banks to treat the nations from Kim.com as anonymous. Let's get to a happier topic, which is that Eleanor Catton has won the Booker Prize. The 28-year-old's novel The Luminaries won against 6 other titles. Prestigious award, and the Duchess of Cornwall presented Eleanor Catton with the award at London's Guildhall. She takes away a £50,000 cheque for her success. But of course, Gordon, prestige is the real prize.
Well, that'll be the least of it. Even though it's a very onerous looking tome, a job to read it, I think it'll sell hugely now. In fact, I hadn't read it and I feel a bit ashamed now, but I looked at it, 800 pages, and thought, have I got enough time left to do it? I'm going to find the time now. In fact, I've ordered a copy from Unity Books. The extraordinary thing about this, I think the publishers ought to be congratulated. People come to me every now and again with a manuscript, and I say to them, look, 80,000 words, that's about right. Over 100,000 words, don't think it. Don't even think about it. No publisher will look at it. So, you know, VUP have taken a huge risk with this, and they've done literature a great deal of good, and I congratulate them on that. I think she's a lovely young woman. I only hope you don't lose her. The tragedy will be if she goes and lives somewhere else. Kirsty Gunn, who is a wonderful young novelist, now not young any longer, she left New Zealand shortly after her international success and is living in Scotland. I think it might be London now, but she was living in Scotland for years. I just hope that we, keep hold of Eleanor, and I think that, you know, an investment in her in the future. The literary novel is having a hard time. It doesn't make it, and this is not going to make a happy e-book, this, at 800 pages. So I hope she comes back, and I hope she keeps writing, and she's a charming and very talented woman.
She seems happily enough ensconced in Mount Eden, judging from the features about her. Good. Elizabeth Knox is joining us, an illustrious New Zealand writer herself, of course, The Vintner's Luck, etc., and much awarded herself, Elizabeth Knox. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Hi, Jim.
Great news for Eleanor Catton and for New Zealand. Do you agree with Gordon McLaughlin? We've got to keep her here now.
It will be fantastic to be able to keep her, and I think her heart is going to stay here anyway, and I couldn't guess what her plans would be. Of course, since I'm married to Victoria University Press, I'm pretty sure she'll stick with them, you know, partly because of the early support and partly because it does no harm to have a New Zealand publisher if you've got a big New Zealand audience. And it's very sad that most of the multinationals have folded up their tents from New Zealand, but it does mean that they're less likely to come along and poach our authors when they become hugely successful.
Elizabeth, did anybody make an attempt to say, look, cut this back a bit, it's very long?
Oh, for Ellie's books, well, it would have been completely impossible because it does have this architecture to it.
Right.
Which relies on the golden section, so that each section of the book, each part of the book, is half the length of the one preceding it. So it starts off with a big, leisurely, stately opening, and then it gradually accelerates through as each section becomes shorter than the last.
Okay.
So it would have spoiled the mathematical structure.
Yeah.
It had to be the length it was in order to work the way it did.
In terms of Gorton's point, though, apparently, and you can confirm this, VUP put no pressure on her to write with a view to popular success. I mean, that's always hopeful. But
VUP never puts any pressure on anyone. They have,
I'll be ringing you tomorrow then, Elizabeth. What's your phone number?
No, they have a great... you know, they have a very long tradition of just supporting all sorts of literary writers. So, I mean, they're a very big poetry publisher, and, you know, nobody with any eye to commercial success goes around publishing poetry. So it's always been about writing. And the thing is that as the pressure on books because of other forms of entertainment becomes more intense, then it becomes even more important that to let books do what books alone can do.
Yes.
And a book like this does that it has that sort of sense of the depth of character and the internal lives of its characters that you can only guess at with film and television for the most part. And film and television are wonderful art forms and they do wonderful things, but novels can do things that other art forms can't.
Yeah, no, nicely said.
Yeah.
So a thrilling day for the literary community. I want to ask you what the obvious question, Elizabeth Knox, which you will have had a dose of yourself. What will it mean for Eleanor and her career? What does it mean for a writer to be awarded like this now?
Oh, well, I mean, it's completely changed her life. This will have completely changed her life. And the sort of the immediate thing is that suddenly she'll be very, very busy. She'll go to lots of festivals. She'll have lots of speaking engagements in her. You know, she won't be able to call her life her own for some time. And that's kind of necessary, that and you're basically paying back the faith of your publishers at that point by promoting the book as a commercial object. So,
but you've got to get it writing again, though,
yes,
you see.
Yes, but then also beyond that, because the sales will be good, she won't have to think about material things or money so much for such a long time that she'll have an amazing amount of artistic freedom, that she'll be able to sort of sit back and, one, feel confident about herself, feel that she doesn't have to keep proving anything, and she'll have time to reflect and to do what she really wants to do next.
Does that ever rob you of resolve?
Oh, it's someone like it. I mean, I don't think Ellie could be robbed of resolve. I mean, she loves what she does. I mean, it shows in her work. Is she's so absorbed in it that she's a natural writer and she'll keep writing no matter what happened to her. As a writer, she'd keep writing.
Fantastic.
So this is just going to make it. This will just make her even more keen.
Elizabeth Knox, thank you very much for joining us 21 minutes past four on the panel with Gordon McLaughlin and Steve McCabe. Now, political commentators believe that Len Brown's done the right thing in fronting on Campbell Live right away and admitting his two-year affair with the woman who served on the council advisory board and stood in this year's Auckland council elections as well. Tracy Watkins will join us on this. A series of questions about all this. First, can he survive, in your view? You first, maybe, this time, Steve.
Well, I think quite possibly. He's done the right thing. I mean, there's no way he's not going to take a bit of flack for this. He's obviously done something stupid, and he's going to be in trouble one way or another. The smartest thing he can possibly do is to make no attempt to defend himself, and it sounds like he's made all the right moves in that regard. He's won the mayoralty of Auckland twice. He's clearly a popular politician. It sounds like he will probably ride this one.
Okay. Well, that's what the commentators are saying. The polls and the Herald and on the radio are against him, Gordon.
I think that polls are very deceptive. If you poll again in a month, I mean, people react very quickly to this sort of thing. They react quickly to television, the mea culpa thing. I think he's done the right thing as far as the media is concerned too, because if he gets it out there, what more can you do? You can't keep trampling on it. If you can keep, presumably it's all out there. If it's all out there, he's certainly done the best thing. And I think if you polled again in a month when everybody's got a little bit bored with it, it will go the other way, frankly, if people are interested enough even to register on a poll. My attitude towards it is simply this, that has he taken advantage of his power and influence on a young, delicate flower of womanhood? I don't think so. She's been happy to reveal whatever happened, rather more than anybody needed. And behind it all is this kind of political menace, which I find very disturbing. As a journalist, I find it a little awkward and disturbing. You know, when journalists become politicians or part politicians, it's a bit of a worry. I hope he survives. I'm not a Len Brown fan, actually, but I hope he survives it. He's been honest. I think he's been honest. We don't know what's out there yet. I think he's been honest. I think if anybody's hurt, it's him and his family. I think he's been hurt, and his family's certainly been more hurt than the lady has been.
Okay, a few more things, just picking up on what you've just said, to discuss as we welcome Tracy Watkins, the political editor of the Dominion Post. Good afternoon, Tracy.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. The nature of the relationship, to what extent do you think you can argue it was a relationship between two mature people? Because one was the mayor of a large city, and the other one was someone trying to make a name for herself, doing everything from TV presenting to, you know, courting publicity over an inseminated birth. I mean, what relationship was that, in your view, Tracy?
Well, I think it is it's a relationship between adults, isn't it? I think, you know, she's 32 from what I read, an intelligent woman, and I don't think you could... she is on an advisory panel for the council, which I think that is actually appointed by the mayor, I understand, but that happened before she... before the relationship started. I don't think there's sort of any, you know, it would be pretty nebulous, I'd say, that it's some sort of abuse of power in that respect. And it's sort of like just one of those classic situations, really, sort of the older man and the younger woman, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but what happens to the women in these relationships, of course, this is the other point, after the men recover?
Well, I think in this case, that's going to be sort of something that... It could be. It's not pleasant, and I think the difference with this story, as opposed to a lot of others, and we've seen lots of MPs and politicians and everyone having affairs over the years, and it hasn't damaged their careers awfully much. The difference with this one is the level of detail, and I don't know whether any of you read the affidavit or averted your eyes, but it is, you know, it's hugely explicit, and
yeah,
I don't think I can recall that sort of detail ever emerging before when you're talking about a relationship.
Do you get a sense that she's been used a little bit as well by other people?
Well, I think probably some of the information that's come out here, it's probably unwise for her. I don't think
yes.
She's done particularly well at protecting herself in this thing, and you can argue that maybe she hasn't been protected particularly well.
Yeah.
I think this stuff is just going to hang around for years, and it's not going to be good for her or Len Brown. Both of them are probably victims of this.
Well, she says she's received nothing but the cheap lingerie, and she's made previous statements about... You know, there's meant to be something in it for the other woman, and there doesn't seem to have been anything in this for her.
Well, she went into it with her eyes open, though, didn't she? I mean, she knew what she was doing. At her age, she knew what she was doing. Does she need to get a payback for this?
Well, I suppose at the end of the day, you know, it was Mr. Brown who had the most to lose. He's married.
Yes.
The mayor, he's the person who had a career and possibly a marriage and a family who'd be deeply affected by this. And I don't think she's, you know... So I think, really, that's the person whose judgment is most at question in this, if you like, because of... how much he did have to lose. I don't think it's as much about the woman at all. But, you know, I guess that we'll see what happens over the... You know, there's still possibly a lot to come out by the looks of things.
What about John Minto's point, Tracy, that... because people are also suggesting a by-election, etc., but, I mean, the cost would be prohibitive. But he's saying a new election, not because he says I'm prying into people's personal lives, but because it will render Len Brown a lame duck mayor, just like Bill Clinton was a lame duck president after his affair came out.
Well, he wasn't.
No, he was a lame duck mayor, but that was due to the fact that he was ineligible for re-election because he was on his second term. It wasn't because of his nonsense with, what was his name, Monica Lewinsky. And that was very definitely a... much more than in this case, a huge setup. There were people out to get him, and they were rubbing their hands with glee when they finally got ammunition against him.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality in this is we have to ask ourselves, what did, what was the lady's name? Bevan Chung, I believe was her name?
Yeah.
What were her motives in this?
Yeah.
What was her motivation? You could spin this around and make the case that she exploited him. She had a goal, which apparently she's not achieved, and now she's feeling aggrieved because she's saying, I didn't get anything out of this. It implies that there was something that she did want to get out of this that she didn't, and now she's feeling aggrieved, and now she's hanging him out to dry. Not that I'm not saying that he is a victim in any case, but you could possibly make that point.
Well, if you believe the affidavit, Tracy, she seems to have been reasonably honest about her intentions, doesn't she? I would have thought.
Yes, she does. I mean, she's made the point herself that it was the power, I think, that she found intoxicating. And so that's a classic story. That's not exactly a new story, is it? But I suppose I come back to the point again that that really it was, the reason this is a story is because of Len Brown and not because of Bevan Cheung. So, and that's where the questions lie in terms of how much he's put at risk, etc. So I think you could speculate for days about the motives of Ms. Cheung, but
can you
it doesn't get you anywhere.
All right, no, fair enough. Can you neatly separate the public life of the mayor from the private life of the mayor and the attitudes that have been revealed, if you believe them, in this affidavit about Len Brown and what went on? Is it possible in this day and age to just make a complete separation?
Well, I think the amount of detail that's come out and the explicit nature of it makes it difficult because these are the things that people are going to talk about, isn't it? And I guess, again, it's where I find this one so unusual. We've certainly written stories in the past about politicians having affairs, but not to this level of detail, and it's almost that which is the more damaging, I think, because it's humiliating, really, for both of them, I think.
But I think I do get a sense that she's been used by other people, and I'm not talking about Len Brown. I get a sense that she's been used a little bit by the journalists involved. Don't you?
Well, certainly they got a good story out of it, didn't they? And so I guess to an extent, that's always the case. It depends on how well she's been protected. And I think probably to some extent, the explicit nature of this has been...
I was a journalist for a long time, and if someone came to me with a story like this, I would be very protective of the person. I wouldn't kill the story, but I'd be very protective of what the person said.
Yeah, and it didn't take very long for it to go from anonymous allegations to the woman being named and out there. That's right.
I guess I was really asking, because this is presumably the reason why these polls, whatever credence you put on them, are running against Len Brown. Is it old school now to expect standards of morality in public life?
Well, it's not something we've particularly or traditionally judged our politicians on in that sense, is it? I mean, I think we've all, for years, and perhaps Gordon might be better to talk about this anyway, but for years there has been a bit of a tradition of I've sort of written about marriage breakups with politicians, but it's never been a huge story, apart from the one exception you would talk about would be Don Brash. And I suppose this story has reached that level, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. The thing about journalism 30 years ago was it wasn't any better in its own way, and it suppressed stuff that should not have been suppressed. I mean, there's a very fine line about what you say and what you don't say. And I think in a case like this, it's a private affair between two consulting adults. She's, I think, been very foolish and perhaps used. He's been extremely foolish, and he and his family, I think, have suffered a great deal more than she has. So, he's a politician. I could tell you about a few other politicians I know personally who were cabinet ministers in New Zealand when I was in the press gallery.
Who may not have survived the level of detail that's been revealed in this
case.
Well,
it was never revealed.
No, that's right. That's the point.
Because nobody would touch it.
Sorry, Steve, you go.
I do want to say, though, you keep saying that Len Brown and his family have been hurt in this. I would say that his family have been hurt in this. Len Brown's the one who couldn't behave himself. I don't accept that he's been hurt, except possibly totally self-inflictedly, in which case he doesn't get any sympathy at all.
I'd agree. I mean, he's been hurt politically, but his family's been hurt much more.
Yeah.
Tracy, just before you go, his survival is not necessarily a done deal yet, in your view?
No, and I don't think we still don't know everything. That's the thing. If this is the end of it, then he probably will survive. Mm. But if there's more information that comes out, or there's sort of suggestions or some more sort of evidence of sort of abuse of power or abusing the position or using sort of resources related to the council, etc., those are always the things that will sink someone, I think.
Or extreme depravity or...
Yeah. And I guess there's a lot of water to go under the bridge yet.
All right. Thank you. Tracy Watkins with us on the panel. Steve McCabe with Gordon McLaughlin. Back with them shortly. But Catriona standing by with the news headlines.
No, it's me today, Jim.